briefly, they were subjected to sound in the higher frequencies, and they fainted.
And now, back to the adventures!
Hey everybody, welcome to How to Read Comics, a part of the Overthink Network. Here we are the podcast that is dedicated in getting new comic book readers started off on the right foot. On How to Read Comics, we try to make recommendations on popular comic book series and some not so popular, and give you guys, the first-time readers, a quick deep dive into each subject. But first, I guess we should probably introduce ourselves. I am your comic book newbie, Nick, and with me as always is the Batman to my Robin, the Joker to my Batman?
I like that one.
Jason. Hey, Jason, how's
now,
it going?
No, I'm concerned, which Robin are you? That's the most pressing concern.
There's a lot of Robins. I don't, the one that lives the longest?
Are you Dick Grayson? Are you Jason Todd?
Sure.
Are you Carrie?
Twist. Yes. Today we will be getting into all the Batmans, all the Robins, all the Jokers, all the things that make Batman that you know and love, the Batman of comic book fame. There's a few differences there, and we're going to talk about that. But first, I just wanted to kind of break the ice a little bit and find out from Jason, kind of what was your first dive into Batman?
All right. So I definitely, my earliest memories of Batman are the Batman TV show. And then the first Batman movie that came out in, I think, 89, the Tim Burton one. But my first Batman comic experiences were the Nightfall arc, where Bane came and broke Batman's back. That was in the early 90s. And even before that, Batman Gothic, I think, was the first comic that I remember getting of Batman and reading. Grant Morrison wrote that one. He's a good comics writer, and it was one of my earliest introductions. And I'd say in the list of things that we're not recommending here, but that I'm recommending, that's a great read. That's held up and worth going back to. How about you? What was your first?
We've talked about it a little bit before, but Batman has come to me mainly just through the movies, and the animated series in the 90s, growing up watching Saturday morning cartoons, you know. But most recently with comic books, I had a great experience going into the comic book store. It was one of the first comics that I went out and purchased on my own that wasn't like gifted to me from a friend saying, hey, you should read this, was, Batman, the Court of Owls series, which we're going to talk about later today, but it was just an awesome experience to go into my comic book store, literally picking up maybe the third comic of my life and going to the guy behind the counter. This case, his name's Carl, and I know he's listening. So, hey, Carl, what's up?
Hey, Carl.
He was asking me what I liked, and I said, I don't know. I like Batman. And he said, oh, you know, he didn't say it like that. That sounds wrong.
Sorry, Carl.
He said he was a little bit more enthusiastic than that. He said, oh, you've got to read Court of Owls. That is where you got to start. And Jason probably has commentary on this that we'll talk about later on why. But once I cracked into that, I was hooked. It is a great place to start reading Batman, modern Batman. That is, Batman comics have been published in the last, I think it's just a couple years ago. So anyway, it was really great. A great comic book store experience, a great comic reading experience, and really kind of the impetus to chat with you, Jason, and kind of start this podcast, to start talking about, okay, I'm here, I'm reading this, but what happened before? Or what am I missing? Because I definitely have a ton of questions that came out of reading Batman Court of Owls, but we'll get into that in a little bit. So that was my first experience with reading Batman. Since then, I've read The Court of Owls, The Killing Joke, which was gifted to me by our mutual best friend, Richard Nile. So hey, Rich.
Hey, Rich.
It's a bunch of shout outs today. Anyway, The Killing Joke, he got that for me last year, which was great. And then I read The Black Mirror. And then the other one that we're going to talk about today, besides The Court of Owls, I read The Dark Knight Returns. And man, that was good. So that was really good. And if I could do it all over again, I would probably read The Dark Knight Returns first.
That makes sense, because it came out earlier than the others, so chronologically that works.
Chronologically, and we'll talk about some more reasons why that might be a good place to start. But actually, let's jump into that right now. For the new comic book reader this would be my question. If I hadn't read any Batman before and coming to you, Jason, I would ask for a new comic book reader, where should you start reading Batman? Were the ones that I've read good places to start? Am I missing something?
Those are fantastic places to start. I think Court of Owls might be the best place to start. And we'll get into the reasons behind that in a moment. But it's designed for new readers. If you're a completionist, you know, just go back to Detective Comics 27 from May 1939 and then read the next 800 issues or so until you catch up. But great places to start are Court of Owls. The tough things about The Killing Joke and Dark Knight Returns, as in terms of places to start, is that they assume a lot of previous Batman knowledge. Now, in both of them, I think most people have this Batman knowledge just from being in pop culture, and that's okay. But the reason that they assume that is they're both kind of making twists, right? Dark Knight Returns is about what if Batman was 50. Killing Joke is this really interesting psychological look at the Joker. And so it's, you know, a change of perspective in a sense to give you a zoom in on the Joker. And those really make sense best if you've got some awareness of Batman already for them to kind of tease at and be like, oh, this isn't your typical Batman story. Court of Owls, in a real way, really is your typical Batman story, and yet it's still got room for twists, room for other things so that it can improve on it. But it's a great place to start.
Sweet. Yeah. And that kind of leads in my next question. Are there a few things that a new Batman reader needs to know about characters and timelines before picking up their first Batman comic?
I would say no. It really depends on what you get into. Again, we're going to get into it with Court of Owls, but there's specific reasons why you don't there, why you're safe. The short version is they restarted continuity with Court of Owls. So there is no history of Batman before that. Everything's being reestablished. A lot of times you'll find a new character and all you've got to do is go Google that character and find out who she is or who he is. So there are a lot of characters. Batman has just such a long history, and there's so many different villains. If you've ever played the video games, Arkham Asylum, Arkham City, etc., you know that one of the cool things is to look through all the different villains that appear. There's, you know, dozens and dozens and sometimes hundreds. Well, that's just because Batman had, you know, it used to be a hero, villain of the week, and it would just change every week. You get really dumb villains like Calendar Man, who kills people based on days of the calendar, and it's awful and lame. And then brilliant writers find ways to make Calendar Man relevant and go back into this old history and switch things around. And Batman continuity and DC continuity in general is a little bit looser than Marvel continuity. We mentioned in our history of comics Crisis on Infinite Earths and how they reset continuity there. Even given that, they've got a little bit more room for people to play with the characters. And then did that story ever happen? Well, maybe, maybe not. Marvel is a little bit more, has a tighter grip. So
gotcha.
In that sense, each author gets to reimagine the characters in new ways. The villains can often change shape and their look and their actions drastically from not necessarily issue to issue, but certainly from decade to decade.
And that's what I found with reading Court of Owls. The way that it's written, obviously these comic books are written and drawn by real people in the world who grew up, you know, watching Batman, reading Batman. They're going to bring their own style to the table. They're going to bring their own intimate knowledge of the series. They're going to bring their version of Batman history into those comics. So I found myself reading through Court of Owls, and they would bring up, I think the biggest thing that I didn't have quite a grasp on was the family.
Mm-hmm.
Batman's family.
Yeah.
Batman has a family.
Yep.
In the Court of Owls. I felt bad that I didn't know who played what part, but the writers, the writer, Scott Snyder, really good writer, across the board, did a good job of giving a little bit of backstory for each one. So you kind of understood the relationships, but I did always feel like I was missing something. Like I didn't understand, and maybe only would understand through lots of comic book reading those connections.
Yeah.
And you said it earlier, hey, if you don't know what's going on, just Google that character's name and read the Wikipedia page and you'll be good. It's not wrong to do that. The completionist in me wants to just have that knowledge already, but you know, that's what we're here to talk about is, hey, you don't have to do that. just jump into the book, jump into the story. If you miss, if there's a couple gray areas that you're not quite sure about, just either just roll on through. It'll be fine. Or, the puzzle will still all come together in the end. Or just, you know, go surf the web a little bit and see what other people have to say. So, okay. So with that, enough, dancing around the subject, let's jump into Court of Owls. Let's talk about that a little bit. So I'm going to preface all this with, saying spoilers ahead. So if you don't mind a few spoilers, go ahead, keep on listening. If you haven't read the Court of Owls first, or press pause, save this, put this podcast in your back pocket, go read A Court of Owls. It'll be a couple good afternoons for you, and, come back, listen to the rest. The questions you probably have, we'll probably answer, in the upcoming bit. So Court of Owls, about when this came out and what was going on when it came out, what purpose it was serving, to its readers.
Yeah, this is part of what DC Comics called the New 52. And this is, the 52 refers to how many ongoing series they have. So they have 52 ongoing series. If one series gets canceled, that means a new one gets started. So there's always 52.
So read them off right now. All 52. Go.
No, not a chance. There's like, I think 30 of them are Batman. Because there's Batman, Batman Incorporated, Batman Unlimited, Detective Comics, Nightwing, you know. You know, there's the Batman suite of them.
So many.
Anyway, so what happened previous to that, though, is there was a 2 month long or so story arc called Flashpoint in DC Comics. DC is rolling along. There's complicated histories, complicated character histories. They have this crossover called Flashpoint in which everything's wrong with the characters. Everything's a little bit off. It's the Batman's wrong, the history's wrong, and the only person who can put it together is the Flash. He starts to realize, wait, this is not the way the world's supposed to be. He solves the whole mystery, and kind of the world ends a little bit. And then the next month, it starts up with the New 52. And now, characters that were dead in the old continuity, for example, Batman's son was dead. He reappears. So when he reappears on like page 5 of Batman, readers just went, wait, what now? Damian Wayne's alive?
Oh, see? Yeah, see? I wouldn't have gotten that.
Yeah.
That's funny. Okay.
Gosh, I hope Damian is his name. I think it is.
It is.
So that was like a big jump because they had just killed him off, I think, a year earlier.
Right. So Damian Wayne is Robin.
Right. Kind of. I don't remember exactly which role he takes. It might be Robin.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I mean, there's so many different Robins.
Yes. Sorry, in the Court of Owls, he's Robin.
Yes. And then there's also Nightwing, right? And Red Robin.
Which is right.
Yep.
And Red Hood.
Oh gosh, it gets
and
complex.
They're all related.
Here's another way to look at it. There have been many Robins. Even though Batman seems to not age, which is an issue we'll address in Batman Returns, the Robins age out of their job. So that we can always introduce a new Robin. I think one of the reasons for that is Robin is a surrogate for the reader. And so Robin has to be new at the world. Robin can't be old and experienced, right? He can't be like, oh, I've seen everything now.
Gotcha.
And you do Robin for 20 years. You got 20 years worth of Robin stories. And it seems a little odd that he's still so naive, that he's still, right. The world is new to him. You know, you've been doing this for 20 years, man. And because of that, they keep trading out the Robins so that they don't get too jaded. And so the Robins are allowed to age a little bit. The one Robin that doesn't get covered in Court of Owls is Jason Todd, who was killed off in the 80s. He was a very, very hated Robin. And DC got the bright idea of they had a cliffhanger, right? Will Robin die or not? Call this 1-900 number to vote. And the idea is, you know, we'll make a bunch of money off of the 900 number. We get like a buck every time a kid votes. It'll be perfect. And people are all complaining about Robin. Everybody hates this new Robin. But kids are not going to vote to kill off Robin. And so no. This will be a time where they all gather together and it boosts sales. There's a lot of attention and Robin survives because the fans love him and it'll boost our egos a bit. Well, guess what? The fans hated him. So they voted to kill off Robin. And so they killed off Robin pretty brutally. The Joker beats him to death with a baseball bat or maybe a crowbar. I can't remember. Anyway,
crowbar.
It's crowbar. Okay. It's rough.
That there's stuff that I read where it says stuff like that. So,
whenever you see
all coming together now.
So,
oh, I love this.
So whenever you see references together to Jason Todd, that's what's going on. I think there's a reference early in Dark Knight Returns to him. So DC Comics reset continuity with the New 52, and the Court of the Owls is the first Batman story arc. Within that story arc, you see some references to other Batman comics. When Batman goes off to try to save all the people that the Court of Owls, all the Talons are out there killing different people. And he says, oh, I'll save these two people. And then it says, for this first, I'll save so-and-so over at Arkham Asylum. For this story, see Detective Comics 17 or whatever it might be. Well, the story is being covered in different ways. That's what's happening there. And that's what typically happens with these crossovers. So some other reasons that Court of Owls is a great place to start. I mean, the first one is just continuity restarted, so you're not expected to know anything.
Right.
It's a bonus if you go, oh, Damian Wayne's not dead. But you're okay. He gets introduced really quickly. You're like, okay, Damian Wayne is evidently his son. They got the same last name. I can put it together.
Yep.
And the other thing, though, is it's a really self-contained story that's going to introduce you to the feel of the new Batman universe.
Yeah.
Batman's a lot younger, it seems like, for one thing. And also, to me, it's a really, really true to the character story. The chief difference between the pop culture Batman that you get in the movies and TV shows and the comic Batman is the detective aspect, which you rarely see in the movies. I can't think of how many times that came up in, especially the most recent one, the Christopher Nolan ones, him being a detective. You know, you might have him put together a clue every once in a while. His detective stuff in the Christopher Nolan one, right? He takes a bullet that's been shattered, puts it back together using 3D imaging gets a fingerprint off of it. Okay. That's just a neat toy. That's not being a detective. That's not salt.
Morgan Freeman is his Lucius, right?
Yeah. Yeah, Lucius Fox.
He's the detective in all this.
Right. 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 Meanwhile, in Court of Owls, Batman has a mystery, and he has to solve it. And he even talks about why is he so sure this doesn't exist? Why is he so sure the Court of Owls doesn't exist? Because he spent decades of his life trying to prove that they did. And so he knows it's a failure, and therefore they can't exist. But he finds clues, and he follows them. He interrogates people. He has to figure out who's lying and who's telling the truth. And it's a much more detective story, which is very true to the Batman character.
Yeah, and I can say that in all the other Batman comics that I've read since The Court of Owls, that is the driving theme on all of them. And so if you like that part of Batman, so if you're reading The Court of Owls and you're like, oh, I like this. He's like trying to solve this mystery, talk to these people, get it figured out. You're going to like pretty much all the stuff that we're recommending because that is who Batman really is.
Yeah.
When it comes to comic books, and that's not what you get from the movies. Yeah. So you've really got two different ways of talking about Batman, and that's the thing that I've appreciated. That's what's really hooked me on to the Batman series as a whole. I don't read a lot of superhero comics. But Batman's kind of the one I've been drawn to the most, and it's probably because of that theme. So, if that's what you're into, you're in the right place. You're in good company. Keep reading Batman. You're gonna like him as a character in this universe now.
So let's switch the role. And usually you ask me questions. Let me ask you some.
Yes,
this
please.
Was your first time reading Batman. What surprised you or what excited you? Why did you like Batman because of this?
Number one was kind of the more dramatic, you know, solving the mystery things that he did. I really like Scott Snyder's writing.
Yeah.
It's not, there's other superhero comics that I've read and they are just super cheesy. He embraces the cheese a lot of the time.
Embrace the cheese.
All right. So in the Batman, Scott Snyder is the main writer for most of modern Batman stuff right now. I think starting with The Court of Owls. I also read The Black Mirror, and in The Black Mirror, I read that most recently, so that's why it's sticking out in my head so well. But he does a really great job of embracing the cheese, like I said, and trying to get trying to put these superheroes in real world settings and just playing around with it. So Batman and Red Robin are scoping out the bad guys on this boat. They've got their bat-noculars out, and they're just kind of assessing the situation. And Batman says, "Hey, they cut my tracer out this morning, but they gave it to some kid to run around the city. Luckily, I'd already planted one of Lucius's babies on their car." Red Robin says, "No idea who they work for yet?" Batman responds, "Nope, but be careful, Red Robin. They're wearing sunglasses at night, which means they're very, very cool."
That's good.
That's some of the and there's lots of stuff like that too in the Court of Owls, and I should probably go back and find some of it, but it's that feeling. He's not taking Batman too seriously, but then they do, like with the Court of Owls, what I liked about it too, they're subversively kind of watching Bruce Wayne for a long, long time. So they have these plans for him. It's a really heavy story. There's a lot of twists and turns, but then there's a lot of good humor in it too, and it just makes it a great read. It's fun, it's dynamic, it doesn't feel overly superhero-y. As soon as it starts, Scott Snyder comes in and he knocks it back down a peg, and I think probably Batman's probably one of the only characters you can do that with, because out of a lot of the other characters, he doesn't have any superpowers,
right?
He's just really good at figuring things out, and he's got lots of money.
Yep.
Those are some of the things that I liked about reading this comic book as kind of my first jump into Batman.
Cool. I think it's a really good one, and Scott Snyder's great. Have you gone on to read any? Well, actually, you've told me what you've already read, so yeah. I know the answer is no. There are two or three arcs following this that are also really solid. Death of the Family, in which we see Joker return. And then Zero Year, which you should read after you read Batman Year One, because it's kind of a pun on that.
Okay.
Just like Death of the Family is a pun on Death in the Family, which is where Robin died, where Jason Todd died.
Gotcha.
So Death of the Family is when Joker comes back. And you're meant to be unsure the entire time. Whether Joker has or has not read The Killing Joke, like how much of The Killing Joke is canon, how much is not. And then Zero Year is we get to see Batman in his first year. But also we get to see this kind of apocalyptic moment. It's a cool comic. I'll just leave it at that. Let you go check that out later. So those are some other good arcs to follow this with. One other thing I want to point to in the Night of Owls storyline, which is technically the name of it, not Court of Owls, but Night of the Owls.
Gotcha.
Is that even though Court of Owls is the main villain.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So Night of Owls is the overarching thing because it goes into the other comic books.
Right.
It goes into the other the other stories, and that's all collected.
Yeah, I just
in a trade.
I wanted to mention that moment when Batman is underground, right? He's in the maze and he's going insane. And all of a sudden you have to turn the comic sideways to keep reading it. And the comic just keeps flipping around as you're going through it. And you get the same feeling of being lost and confused as Batman's having it, which was such a cool moment. I thought such a cool kind of textile moment where it only works as a comic. It doesn't work electronically. I even tried to read it as a PDF today or yesterday. It was really tough. Lots of twisting my head. To try and see what was happening.
I guess the last thing I'll say about the Court of Owls, Night of Owls, you'll get to a point fairly early on reading it where you're finding out more about this secret society called the Court of Owls. And it jumps back and forth in history and kind of tries to fill you in. Was the Court of Owls a villain from previous versions of Batman, or are they brand new? Is this a brand new villain to the Batman series?
Both is kind of the answer. All right. So I did a little bit of research on this. I don't think the Court of Owls ever appeared previous to this. However, there was a sometimes hero, sometimes villain known as Owlman, who was a large part of Batman's past. Sometimes, just one of those longtime characters that had a lot of variations, sometimes really cool, sometimes super corny. And so that's a little bit of what Scott Snyder is playing with, is reinventing Owlman. But giving him this longer history. And so he's performing. This is probably a great time to talk about it. Do you know the term retcon?
Yeah. Retroactive continuity.
That's exactly it. And
I learned a lot about that when I watched Lost.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it comes from Alan Moore is one of the masters of retconning. Kind of the classic example is what he did in Swamp Thing. He takes over Swamp Thing. The Swamp Thing's origin story is that a scientist named Alec Holland, who was experimenting with plants, and then he got blown up, and his DNA mixed with the plant DNA, and he became a plant. So Alan Moore takes over in like issue 20 or something, and almost right away, in like the first or second issue he's got, he has Swamp Thing find out that he's wrong, that that's actually not his origin story. And that what happened was Alec Holland's DNA fell onto a plant and the plant got confused and thought it was Alec Holland. In other words, Alec Holland's dead.
Oh, the plant thought...
Like, it's like finding out Bruce Wayne has been dead all along and there's actually only this guy named Batman pretending to be Bruce Wayne on occasion.
Yeah.
So it's a big twist.
Yeah.
And it's retroactive continuity. You know, when Len Wein originally created Swamp Thing, of course the story was that Alec Holland, his DNA blew up all over, you know, yada, yada, yada. But now we've done this retroactive continuity thing. Similarly, Zack Snyder invents all these things, right? All the 13th floors in all the Wayne buildings,
right.
The entire history of owls, the character who went insane, the old Wayne progenitor who went insane in the 19th century, screaming about owls. All of that's invented, right?
Okay.
But there's little touchstones, right? So some of the Wayne buildings might be represented in other Batman comics.
Gotcha.
And just nobody happened to ever be on a 13th floor. Or maybe the gargoyles were in a previous comic. So he'll find little bits to plug it into and then fill in the details in between.
Yeah, tease out these little nuggets. This series teases out a rich, rich history of the Waynes, of Batman, of where he came from, why he came from, why he's doing what he's doing, and why they're so interested in Batman. And the last thing we'll say about this is it was 2012, 2013, I think, that this came out. So the great thing is you can get all the comic books at once in a trade paperback and read them as a whole story. I think as a new comic book reader, if you were to have only gotten this story one issue at a time, you'd be pulling out your hair because not being sure of why these things are coming from, where they're coming from. Now, you know, having a few years between when it came out and now we've got, you can read it all at once.
Yeah. And that's a good thing to mention. When you're reading as it goes, it's tough to keep up with comics on a month by month basis, especially if there's any gaps. You can no longer remember where the story was when last you left off if it's been, you know, 3 or 4 months since the last issue you read. So it's nice to get those trade paperbacks and be able to read them all in one chunk.
And speaking of time passing us by and there being some distance between the story when it was written and now, I think it would be a great jumping off point into The Dark Knight Returns.
Let's do it.
That predates all of this. 1985,
86? 85, I think. Is it 86?
I picked up the 30th anniversary edition. So, yep, 1986.
Cool. Nice work.
So, yes, 1986, this comic was destined for me the year I was born. So, and it's really funny to think about this comic being current, like when I was an infant. One of the great things about this comic, when you read it, it's very much of its time. There's commentary on things happening in the 80s, which I really don't have a great grasp on since I was an infant when this was being written, but it feels good. You know, actually, if you go back and listen to another episode on the Overthink, Best Album Ever, where Ben talks with his guest about Peter Gabriel's album, that was one of the first things they talk about is a great album comes from something that isn't necessarily timeless, but something that really encapsulates the time that it was in. The Dark Knight Returns is exactly that. It's not necessarily completely timeless. Batman seems to be a timeless character, but the way that they approach Batman in this comic book puts him in a specific time at a specific time in his life, a specific time in Gotham's life or, you know, the world at the time, 1986. And you really feel it. And there's some quirky things, but it's great. Somebody referred to it as the catcher in the rye of Batman.
That's a great way to look at it, because much like the catcher in the rye, if you read it when you're 15, it means a lot and it works really well. And if you get some distance and reflect a bit, all of a sudden you hate the Batman that it represents. He's not a good guy. You know, he's got some issues. And that's some of the brilliance of it, right? That's what's kind of so captivating about it is that Batman in this comic is a psychopath. And then you get a little bit more distance, because at first you're like, oh, wow, I really respect Frank Miller for being able to do that. And then you read, like, any Frank Miller book from the last 20 years, and you're like, oh, I get it. Frank Miller's a psychopath. Okay, cool. Cool. Okay, my bad.
Hey, at least he's consistent.
Oh, yeah. No, hey, it seems very clever at the time. But the more he gets to write, the more you just say, I think this is more about you, bro.
Yeah. And to give credit where credit is due, that was Kevin Smith that quoted that. He says, "The Dark Knight Returns, for many people of my generation and for many people that followed from the moment it was published forward, is like the Catcher in the Rye of comic books."
Yeah, and I would say if you're interested in learning more about Batman, there's no better podcast to go to than Kevin Smith's Fat Man on Batman, which is a fantastic podcast. So go check that out.
We'll defer to the master there. So podcast over, right? No,
podcast over. So let me give you a little context around Dark Knight Returns.
Yes, please.
First off, with Frank Miller, he'd been writing Daredevil for half a decade or so over with Marvel. Had some great runs on that. Came over to DC and did Dark Knight Returns, and then went back to Marvel. Was able to kind of move back and forth pretty freely between the two, like most creators are not able to do. I would definitely recommend checking out some of those Daredevil runs as well. They're really fantastic. I especially like the work he did with Bill Sienkiewicz, including Elektra Assassin and Love and War. Yeah, go check out some of that Daredevil work. So then we cut over. It's dark. Daredevil gets to go dark. Okay, so DC, we already mentioned
that. Is that a blind joke?
No, it was not meant to be. So we already mentioned that Marvel was ready to go dark and to be gritty in the 70s, right? They were given the more realistic tales. DC was struggling to do that. And by the early 80s, they're getting more serious. They're able to do it a little bit better, but they're still not at the level that Marvel is already doing. And when Frank Miller comes over with his gritty Daredevil that he's done and tries to take on Batman, he goes grittier than gritty, right? He goes way beyond what anybody's seen before, which is what makes it so fun. The story is that he loved Batman when he was a kid, then he grows up, now he's in his 30s, and all of a sudden he just realizes that he has aged past Batman, that Batman will forever be 30. And that's not okay. You know, his bones are starting to creak. He's feeling old. And yet Batman's forever young. And so he said, okay, so what is old Batman like? And he writes this old Batman. And it turns out old Batman, which is the Batman of Dark Knight Returns, has retired. He's a little bit like Clint Eastwood. He wants to yell at you to get off his lawn, wants to murder you. Maybe wants to go on stage and yell at a chair for an hour. You know, all that kind of stuff.
He's totally Gran Torino.
He's full on Gran Torino. Republican National Convention, Clint Eastwood. It's a really exciting book because of that. The violence gets ratcheted just way up really, really quickly. And it ends up being Frank Miller's kind of social statement about where the world is going to.
Yeah.
A lot of that has to do with television. Dark Knight Returns is really about television more than it's about violence necessarily or even about Batman. And you get that very quickly in that the first panels.
So you get that in the cutscenes between all the parts that Batman is in. There's little cells that are TV screens of people making commentary, you know, Gotham's citizens making commentary on what's going on in the news and stuff. And
yeah, let's do a quick close reading of page one and we can see that. One, you've got 16 panels, which is a lot for a page. That's the way that Dark Knight Returns works. It gets really claustrophobic. And in the first, 13 of those panels, it's Bruce Wayne attempting to save his race car from crashing. And there are these big vertical rectangle panels. And then the last three are, as you mentioned, television shaped. Immediately, you get the idea just from the shape of the panel that we're watching television and that we're getting a voiceover of a reporter who gives you the great kind of twist, which is super, super dumb in that it doesn't last at all. But I think it's a great one, because he's depicting terrible TV newscasts. And it's spectacular finish to the Newman elimination as the Ferris 6000 pinwheeled across the finish line, a flaming coffin for Bruce Wayne. Or so everyone thought, turns out. Yeah, I mean, come on. That's terrible. You can't have a cliffhanger from one panel to the next on the same page. But it gets across the idea of the hokey television newscast. And that continues as probably the most consistent voice, or the two most consistent voices, are one, Batman's throughout, gritty, angry old Batman, and two, the television. Even though it's filled with many, many voices, it's this consistently ludicrous, over-the-top, vain kind of thing that goes on and on.
Yeah, so let's keep digging in this comic. So what do we want to talk about? Let's take it one step back.
Let's continue our close reading. And in issue one, turn to page 15. So this is just a few pages after where we were just looking. And you should be looking at a page that starts in the upper left with Arkham Home for the Emotionally Troubled.
Yes, I'm there.
Now, about three quarters of the way through, you've got two panels that are a picture of Two-Face's face, all wrapped up in gauze.
Yes.
All right. Look carefully at the gutter between the panels and tell me if you notice anything.
So yeah, the gutter goes directly through
his face.
This figure, his face. Yes. Yep.
So on the left panel, we see Maybe Gordon. And on the right panel, we see Is Right About Me. Right. This is called a diptych. We've got two panels in which the idea is basically the camera is moving. If there's a camera.
Gotcha.
We're presenting the same scene in cut into two panels. All right. So you're looking at those two panels. We just see Two-Face's eyes wrapped behind gauze, taking up the whole panel. Now look at that gutter in between and look closely at it and then tell me what you see.
Oh, there's a line going through it.
Yeah. One of the lines connects. And that is such a subtle and interesting thing that Frank Miller does. I think it's such a brilliant little flourish. Because, again, it's all about duality. It's all about this separation. And yet in this separation, we have a kind of connection with that line. And the line, of course, doesn't just separate. It also divides, which is basically Two-Face's entire idea. So this is not the kind of thing you could do on just any comic page. It only works right here. It only works with Two-Face, and it only works with him covered in bandages. But it's such a brilliant little thing that he discovered.
And so that wasn't a mistake.
No. It may have started that way, but then he went, oh, I get it.
There you go. Cool. So some of the other things to point out about The Dark Knight Returns. Batman comes out of retirement. He starts shooting guns. He gets a new Robin. She's pretty dang awesome. There's mutants I guess they're mutants, right?
Yeah, they're a gang called the Mutants, and they look kind of like they could be mutants. It's unclear exactly what their origin is.
Batman's a straight up sociopath and getting back into the cracking skull games just to prove his own self-worth, basically.
Yep.
The thing about The Dark Knight Returns, just as a whole collection of comics, as a whole book here, it's such a departure off of what you would have read in The Court of Owls. There is definitely still detective-y things that end up happening, which is great. So you still see that Batman has that edge that playing chess five moves ahead of his opponent, which is great. You get just a raw, you get to see a lot of the other characters in the DC universe. They all are written in and get played on this 30 years later idea. They all age, except for Superman. The villains too. I guess it might be interesting to say too, you know, the Joker's here. It's 30 years later for him, but he doesn't look like he's aged a day. Still just as crazy as ever. You've got all these things working for it that are fun, that are a great play on the idea of Batman with still having a good foot in the traditional Batman storyline. But then we mentioned it earlier, just this comic really points out the idea that a comic book can be social commentary.
Yeah.
The Court of Owls is just a fun romp through the bowels of Gotham City and Batman trying his hardest to save his own skin and come out the other side alive, basically. Not a lot of social commentary there. Dark Knight Returns, you've got panels with caricatures of Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
And literally Ronald Reagan wearing an American flag as a suit and telling everybody that everything's okay. And then the next panel, you've got some crazy neo-Nazi chick with swastikas tattooed on her ass. There's just a lot of stuff going on in here, and you know, it bounces back and forth between the absurd and making statements on what, you know, Frank Miller felt America was going through at this time.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly a comic that's had it's been really resonant. It was resonant with its time, but it's also reverberated down through history afterwards. So it's for a long time in the 80s and 90s, the goal was to outgrit Dark Knight Returns. And so everybody had to have a gritty reboot. We're seeing this in movies now, but it's, you know, 30 years behind the time. And so Batman versus Superman was it was a very, very similar to a remake of Dark Knight Returns, just more interested in the last issue than in anything else. And Dark Knight from the Nolan series was very similar to Dark Knight Returns in a lot of ways. And Batman Rises also had some Dark Knight Returns in it. So all of them have picked up on it. It's one of the most important books in Batman's history and maybe in comics history. It probably shaped comics too much, in the sense that it's not a lot of fun to just keep outgritting people, right? Mm-hmm. The world is maybe dark enough. We should have some dark stories and some light stories. We can have all kinds of stories rather than just, yeah, but isn't Batman crazy? Yeah, but we've told that story. We don't necessarily need to keep telling it.
This is probably, bar none, the grittiest Batman there is.
It's up there. It can get... When it gets grittier than this, it gets goofy. And there's some moments when Dark Knight Returns gets a little goofy.
Right.
So if you want Batman to get in and have to fight cannibals, you know, we can have that story. We can do that. But there's really no need. Right. I think we've gotten gritty enough here. One fun thing for you to do if you go back and reread this, I would point you to Frank Miller's art and just the amount of black ink he uses. Imagine the inking process, and I'm not sure if this was him or Klaus Janson. I think it was Klaus Janson actually doing a lot of the inking. But he's left a bunch of space to be inked in black, and it becomes a really distinctive style. And if you think about the actual process of drawing it in, of white paper with black ink on it, you realize how much extra work he's giving himself.
Yeah, actually, in the copy that I got, Dark Knight Returns 30th Anniversary Edition, in the back, they have some of his original drawings. When you look at it, he puts little X's in the areas that are going to be black. And so you've got some of these pages that are just, there's a great scene where Batman is on horseback and pretty much the whole bottom two thirds of the page is covered in little teeny X's. To mark where it's going to be colored in black. So then you can flip over to that page that it is, and you look at it and go, holy moly, yeah, it's all black. It's all Batman riding a horse in black, which is a really cool image. Anyway.
Yeah. And those X's are, that is the way that you tell the inker this is supposed to be black. This is supposed to be all the way black.
Yeah, and there's actually a lot of places where they did color in black that he didn't even put X. It would probably just get distracting at some point.
Yeah.
So anyway, those two books are going to be where you are going to have the best chance of starting off reading Batman on the good foot. Read those. They're two perfectly contrasted books to read. You can kind of see the whole history of Batman as we know him in comic books today. But there's more reading to be done. We are not done with Batman. We will probably never be done with Batman, but we want to prepare you for the next time that we do talk about Batman. I'm not sure which episode it will be in the series of things, because there's so many other great things to get to. But Jason's going to make some homework recommendations where you should go after you read The Dark Knight Returns and Court of Owls.
Yeah, so here, these are not the homework that we're going to do for our next one, but just some random thoughts. There is a sequel to The Dark Knight Returns called The Dark Knight Rides Again. You can check that out. I would instead point you towards getting out of Batman and going to read some of Frank Miller's Daredevil work instead, especially his work with Bill Sienkiewicz. And then if you liked Court of Owls, I would just continue right on to the next one, which is Death of the Family, and then after that into Zero Year. Now, on to homework. So for our next one, we're actually going to take a break from Batman and just talking about reading online comics. And so we've got two web comics to recommend. First off, XKCD. And you can just stroll through randomly and find different XKCD comics. Just Google XKCD. They're very funny. There's very little continuity. So you can kind of start anywhere and just wander around. And each one is funny. And then the other one is Failing Sky. And we'll have links to both of those. Failing Sky is a much different book, lots of continuity, but again, you can kind of jump in anywhere because it's meant to be read out of order in a way that only the web really allows you to, which is kind of cool. So I would check out both of those, XKCD and Failing Sky. We'll talk about them in the next episode, and then we'll get back to Batman. And when we get back to Batman, we will talk about Long Halloween. We'll talk about Year One and Arkham Asylum, A Serious House on Serious Earth. That's the subtitle for it. It's often just called Batman Arkham Asylum. It's an easy one to find. And it's by Grant Morrison and David McKean. We will learn more about each of those people later as we read comics written and drawn by either or each of them. Grant Morrison, really, really cool cat. Dave McKean, one of my favorite artists of all time, did every cover for every Sandman. And if you know Sandman, there's some weird, weird stuff. So Arkham Asylum, Serious House on Serious Earth is a great way to get into both.
Yeah, those also sound like some great things to read now. Halloween's just a couple days away. You could stay up all night watching Stranger Things or reading something out of that collection, I'm sure. So great. Thanks again for listening to How to Read Comics. Again, we are part of the Overthink Network. This is a collection of podcasts that just loves having conversations like we had today, that takes all of our pop culture and dives deeper in on each subject and have some great diverse conversations because of it. So
one more thing I'll throw in just for the Overthink Podcast Network, let's do some crossover here and just say that the Court of Owls are not what they seem. They are instead replicants. And that gives us all the owls in this month's Overthink Podcast Network. Yes, there are owls on What Exactly Am I Watching Here, the Twin Peaks show that I'm on. There are owls in Blade Runner. And of course, we talked about the Court of Owls here. So this is Owl Month, Owltober. Try to spot all the owls you can on all the podcasts that I'm on this month.
Thanks again, Jason, for hanging out. And I always like to end each episode by asking you one crazy random fact about comic books that I probably don't have any idea about.
Batman used to use guns.
Well, there you go.
You said something about Dark Knight Returns, and then all of a sudden Batman starts using guns. It's like, well, he didn't start. He actually originally had a gun. And they kind of wrote that out. And it became such an integral part of his character that Batman never uses guns. Well, except for in the first, like, few years of his life, like, that was kind of normal. He was a detective. He had a gun.
There you go.
That's a weird thing about Batman for you.
Perfect. That's it for today. Thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Na 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 na. How to Read Comics.
I love it.